So they were in Hong Kong, God, what do you want us to do? And they had a map of China in front of them, and they felt God was pointing out to them province. And they went there, and they were actually able to build up a relationship with Civil Affairs Bureau and with the orphanage director there, and he allowed them to go into the orphanage for 10 days every day and just give the children attention. They had actually professional medical people with them, give them therapy, medical care, and they were able to go back and took teams in 4 times, 5 times a year at the beginning. And in the end, they had suggested that to the director and to Civil Affairs to build up a rehabilitation center as a center to show that children with impairments can really make progress and are very valid people if they get, I mean, they are really valid people anyway, but the Chinese don't think that. If they get the support they need. And in the end, the director and civil affairs from the city and from the province invited the organization to come and build up a rehabilitation center and to build up training for Chinese orphanage staff. That's how it all started. And I was involved from 95 onwards. We actually in 95 we got that invitation, and in 96 we got the building, a very old but a very good building, needed a lot of repair. We had an organization from Australia, it's Mobile Mission Maintenance, and they came several times to renovate that building. And January 97, we were able to open, and in a time of 5 months, we took in 30 school-age children with impairments, some with slight impairments, some multiple disabled. And it was just amazing. In the beginning, we didn't have therapy staff, but just giving those kids love and how to say that, respect them, and made such a big change. I actually had taken pictures of them back at the orphanage, just to that everybody of the team, we were 6 adults and 2 children who started to work there, could get to know them. I knew them well because I had been in language school and went to the orphanage 3 afternoons a week. And then 3 months after opening, we took pictures of the children again for the sponsorship program. And then we realized what happened when we looked at those pictures. There's such a huge difference in their expression and in their how they lived before. Some were just shut up and they had become lively. Yeah, it was just amazing. And then from there, then in 99 we were able to start the second center in the same orphanage for smaller kids. They are now caring for over 100, mainly young adults now, a few kids, but the others have all grown up. We have built up group homes and a sheltered workshop for those kids. Some are just physically disabled and are able to work in a workplace, and we are trying to help them to integrate in a workplace that they get more independent. And then they have also started a program to support families who have kept their disabled children in the family. They offer counseling, they offer actually schooling, medical care, therapy, or help those families to integrate the children into normal local schools, building up a support group among the families to prevent abandonment. Because we realize those children who have been abandoned, we sometimes found them. Sometimes they were at the gate to the orphanage. They were always dressed according to the season. They always had food with them. They were placed very secure, but that one would find them. You knew they have been loved, and it just the families didn't have money, resources to look after those kids. Because if you have a disabled child in China, what do you do when it gets to kindergarten age? No kindergarten will take the child. There is no school. There is no financial support. If you don't have money, how can you help your child? If it needs an operation, child doesn't get the operation. So, yeah, still there are still lots of children being abandoned. Now has built up a second center in another city and the third center.
So there are three centers now.
Yes, yes.
And I'm interested in this effort to keep the children in their families. How widespread is that effort? Is that something that's being done as part of each of the three centers? Is that something located in one of the centers? And how did you all come to the decision that actually trying to provide services so that children can remain with their families might be a desirable way to go?
In co-working with the city government, it's actually the city government is very welcoming and supporting, because they also realize that it would be a great help. I guess they would like to do it in the other locations too, but they didn't have the resources so far. They used to have two centers, has gone back to one, because the personal resources were lacking. It's always you need somebody from the foreign team to initiate it and to lead it, but it's always the aim to hand over to local people. Mm-hmm. So this is still growing and still being developed. They actually started this after I had left. I left in 2005. But we talked about it before, because we sometimes saw these children being abandoned or coming into the orphanage, and our hearts just broke. And we also think that the hearts of the parents must be broken when they see no other way to help their child. I can give you an example which was really very, very touching. In 2000. A little boy was abandoned actually at the office of the welfare center over lunchtime. Was a Saturday, nobody was in the office, but our leader was there at that time, and we had our office in the same building, and when he walked down, he saw that basket with the child in it. Actually had a letter in the basket. That's very unusual. And he can read Chinese, and he read the letter, and the father wrote, the boy was about 10 days old, and the father wrote that he just can't see any other way to help this child. This boy didn't have an anus, wasn't open, his bowels weren't open. So he had taken the boy to the hospital, and the operation would have cost 10,000 renminbi. It's maybe at that time, it was 1,000, maybe 2,000 US dollars. And the father didn't have the money, so the hospital wouldn't do the operation. He had to take the boy back. But if the boy doesn't have the operation, he will eventually die. So the father didn't know what to do and thought, maybe he has heard that there are foreigners working in the welfare center or that children are getting adopted abroad. He writes, I really love that boy and would like to keep him, but I don't know how to help him. And I'm hoping that you are able to find parents for him who will care for him. And that was so heartbreaking, really, and actually brought then the boy to the welfare center, to the orphanage, because we weren't allowed to just take children into our center. We had to have their permission. And then, but actually after the weekend, the welfare center asked us, are you willing, able to take the boy? His name is Tangan, and care for him. And we agreed, and we took him to hospital. And we had good connection with the children hospital in Shanghai. And they actually helped us, and they had a fund who also paid for the operation. They sent their surgeon to Changsha, to the children hospital, and the child got the operation. The boy was never adopted. He is now 16, yes. But he lives in our center. And he is also deaf. We don't know if he was deaf from birth or if it happened because of too high dosage of antibiotics. They sometimes do that in China, unfortunately. But he's okay, yes. And I think he's happy in our center.
What will his future be like, do you think? How long can he live in the center? What happens later?
So far, keeps all the children or former children in their care and supports them to get some training, to find a job. Or there are, of course, more disabled ones which work in his sheltered workshop, vocational training center. The boy might be able to do a job outside. Support him. As long as China, as the government, lets him work there, they will do that. But they also have a lot of local staff, and most leading positions, or all the leading positions, are in local hands now. It's there to give advice, to support, and of course a lot of money still comes from abroad, but they also are trying to get support in China itself, and they also have a sponsorship program in China that Chinese people sponsor children.
So it sounds like the real goal here is to, as you said, is to sort of have facilitated these services, set them up. Is the goal to ultimately one day see them be completely supported by Chinese people in China and really have as minimal involvement as possible? In other words, that it be self-determining by the Chinese people? Or what's the ultimate end goal, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the end goal. Because, you know, you never know how long a foreign NGO can stay there. At the moment, China is making strict rules. And until now, NGOs were under the Civil Affairs Bureau. But now, in the beginning next year, they will be on the Public Security Bureau, so that will be a complete different matter.
So that's a change under Xi Jinping, I guess, with the sort of tightening of a number of things. Yeah. Do you know how many children roughly have been actually, through the efforts of your organization, have been able to remain within their families?
No, I don't know that.
What? Tell me a little bit about the role of your this organization that you've worked with is a Christian organization. What role does? Is there any overt evangelizing about Christianity in the work that you do, or is it really by example, the philosophy behind what you all do?
From the foreign team, it's by example, because we have to work together with the government. So it's very hard. But what we realize, because we also employed right from the beginning a lot of Chinese Christians, and we facilitated with just the center and the workers that other workers became Christians, or our kids became Christians. After we had been running for about half a year, and we openly prayed with the children before meals, or our Chinese staff did. They also going to bed. They held Sunday services for them. After half a year, everything was closed down. We weren't allowed to do that anymore. Why? In the local church, so many new people came to the local church, were believers, and they had to register where they were. So it had to happen more secretly. I remember we had one young lady with an impairment living in our center. She was already 18 or 20. We also took her in because her future would have been very bad if we hadn't taken her in. And one of our local carers found her once when everybody was eating lunch, going to the toilet. She says, "You have to go to eat." She says, "Yes, I have to. But I can't pray at the table." "Okay, I'm going to the toilet and pray there." That was really amazing, because also our kids or young people had become Christians. I think it's a bit more relaxed now, but they have always to be very careful. Yeah.
Do you have any concerns that in becoming Christian, the Chinese people run a certain risk? Do they not?
I think at the moment, it always depends on the local government, how risky it is. But you never know if it's going to change. You never know that.
And so you were, I just want to make sure I have the parameters of this. You were in China for how many years, from when to when?
1995 till 2005.
And over that decade, can you tell me when you started to see a transition of mostly healthy children to mostly disabled children coming into your care?
Actually, 95, they didn't have so many healthy babies, like 40. 4 years later, they had about 100, or then it went up to 200. And I wasn't there anymore when it must have been after 2005 when the numbers went down. Because it was when I was already back in Switzerland, I heard these stories that orphanages were found out, that they actually actively tried to get babies. Some were bought to make money through adoption.
That was the sort of big scandal that yes, really reverberated internationally. What was that like for you to learn about that, having done a decade's work?
I just felt confirmed what I had been assuming. lived in the compound. In the beginning, we had to live there, and I nearly to the end. I only moved out 2004, so I've seen a lot happening there.
So while you were there, I want to make sure I'm understanding this. You suspected from what you were seeing that there was that the children, not all children coming into the orphanage were outright abandoned, that there was something else going on. It sounds like,
yes.
How did you, what manifested itself that made you wonder while you were there?
I observed once that a big load of children were brought in. And once, that was in 1999, after we had opened Hope House, it was a weekend, suddenly two policemen walked in. They had each had a polystyrene box, quite a big one, and in each box were two babies. And I told them, I'll just bring them in because nobody of the supervisors of the state orphanage was around. So I just took them in. And two of them were twins. One was very tiny, and I took that one to the hospital because it was not very heavy. Maybe a kilo and a half, 3 pounds. The other two were healthy babies. They went to the state orphanage after the weekend. And the tiny little one, I told them in hospital you have to keep her until she's at least 2 kilos. But I had to take her, I think I had to take her back when she was 1.8, but she was doing okay. And her sister was heavier and she was doing okay. And then after 3 months, I was told, tomorrow morning, it was Friday, tomorrow morning you have to bring those two babies to the office. Because the babies apparently had been from Guangzhou province, so the babies need to go back there into an orphanage. I said, why? They need more care here. Why? What happens to them afterwards? Oh, they will find parents for them and so on. I couldn't do anything about it. When I brought those babies to the office, there was newspapers were there, high officials were there. Yeah, I couldn't do anything. I just had to give them away. And I don't know, these people who had been caught with the babies actually were on the way to sell them. And they had been caught. So it was a big thing. Mm. Yeah. So that started, I had some suspicions. Yeah. And then, I saw babies coming in, a huge big load, early morning, like 5 or 6 in the morning. And so that was really strange. Yeah. I didn't do anything about it because, I didn't know what to do. And
that was around 1999, is that correct?
These were the four babies. The other incident was later in the early 2000s, 2001, 3, I can't remember.
So the other incident, which you're told these children are going to Guangzhou, and you understood there was really no point in raising any questions about that. They were headed there, and that was it.
I couldn't do anything. I tried. And I even spoke to an official and asked him to take good care of them. And, they didn't have any means to transport those kids. And I said, just wait. I'll get some milk bottles, and I get you, I can't remember, I got them blankets or whatever. Just I wanted the kids to be safe.
And so the officials from Guangzhou just took them off with the milk bottles and things that you supplied.
Yeah. Actually, it's not Guangzhou, it's Guangdong province. I don't know which place from there. And, some children were sold by their family because they had so many. Didn't have enough money to feed them. So they sold some of them because in the countryside they just tried and tried and tried and tried until they get the son. So they had so many girls which didn't have papers, which were illegal, and so they sold some. But I assume that also children were stolen.
At that point where you started to make this assumption and to see things that clearly did not paint a picture of random abandonment, did you ever rethink the role of your organization in China? I wonder what it did to your own understanding of being there and trying to help. Did it ever make you doubt it?
No, because we were working with disabled children, which is a different matter. They were not sold, they were not bought. Because we, or at least I think all of us wanted to show people that these children are not rubbish, that they are people, very precious people, even if they can never ever work or do anything for the society, but they still, maybe they can smile at you. And yes, they're just because they are there, they are precious people. That's what we wanted to show them. And of course also show those kids, let them experience that they are important and precious.
It sounds too like from what you were saying earlier that contrary to I think a lot of Westerners I think make certain assumptions about China. One of them is that there is just this no understanding of disability or willingness to try to help disabled people. And what you described earlier were, in fact, was a father who was heartbroken at giving up his severely disabled 10-day-old son, and efforts to keep disabled children within Chinese families who wanted them. So I wonder, you know, how do you regard the understanding of disability in China, and what do you think needs to happen to help Chinese families accept and be able to care for their disabled children?
I think, first I have to say, I think in these 20 years, people in China started to think differently. We have met orphanage directors who really have a heart for those kids. And also society is learning more and more about it and is starting to think differently. That's already a positive, very positive development. Of course, there are lots and lots of foreign NGOs doing same or similar work, and that's a good impact. But that Chinese families really can keep their children, care for them, they would need support from the government.
How do you regard the adoption, international adoption from China now? The conversation has evolved a lot, even in the years since I adopted my daughter in 2008. One of the things we know for sure now is that the stories of random abandonments are not always true, that there have been real questions that have been raised that I think are harder and harder to ignore about how so many children arrive in orphanage care. I wonder, has your thinking about the legitimacy and viability of international adoption of children from China changed at all as this information has become harder and harder to not see?
I haven't thought about it. For the children I was caring for, I was always happy when they got the family. Yeah. And I was caring for disabled children, not for healthy babies. But I sometimes was people who had heard about me through other people who had adopted and were assigned a healthy baby. Sometimes they contacted me and I tried to get information for them. And that happened also while I was living there. But not so much. We didn't work with the healthy babies because they got the better care than the disabled ones.
So do you think that there's still a legitimate international role for adopting disabled children from China?
I just know still now they have more chances abroad. And some children, especially older ones, they really want to have a family and be adopted. And in China, they don't adopt disabled children. We even had a hard time. We tried to build up a foster care program. But foster families wanted healthy, cute little girls and not disabled girls or boys. And at the moment, I think there's only just one. We started maybe with 7 or 10 we had in foster care, but we had to take many back because they were too difficult for the foster family. And I think there's only one left in a foster family. 2 or 3 got adopted, which also stayed in the foster family till they got adopted. And there's one young lady now still in a foster family, and we didn't. Yeah, we realized we can't build up that more. There's just no response there. So they are better. I mean, yes, they have more chances abroad. And, of course, to have a family is great for them. But on the other hand, if they have a good group home there and good carers, then they also have a good life there in China. But that's not everywhere built up yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I adopted a boy too.
I was going to ask you if you had children. So that you read my mind. So tell me about your son.
His name is Pin Pin. I kept his Chinese name because he was used to it. He came into the orphanage when he was about 3 years old. I knew him from the very first day, and he was a lovely little boy, didn't talk a lot. He has a light cerebral palsy, right-hand side. His muscle tonus is more, is too much. Sometimes I can't find the English word, sorry. And he has a middle severe intellectual disability. He was very sick in the beginning, actually in the first weeks when he was at the orphanage, he got so depressed, he refused to eat. We actually had to force feed him with a tube. And I always cared for the most sick kids there. And my co-workers, we prayed for him, and eventually he got better. And then one day I observed him. He was playing with one of our local staff. He's actually walking here.
Hi, Pin Pin. How are you?
Hello.
I'm Jenna.
Jenna. Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Jenna.
Hi, Pin Pin. I'm talking to you from America.
observed him playing with his caregiver, and I realized that he really likes fun. And I said to God, it's amazing. You saved this child's life. And now he's developing such a funny personality. I just wonder what your plans are with this boy. And I just felt God was telling me, you can be part of it. Adopt him. I said, oh, but if I adopt him, I don't have enough time for all the other kids, because I had just gone through that. I wanted to, desperately wanted to adopt. I had many kids I would have chosen. And I said, told myself, no, you can't, because sometimes I was working 150%, and then I don't have so much time anymore. And after I dealt with it and thought, no, I'm not going to adopt, this comes along, this pimping comes along. And then I just left it with that. And that was beginning of the year 98. And he got ill again in summer. He had hepatitis, because everybody, no, some kids had hepatitis there. He was in isolation, and then he got well, and then he was ill again. And he just was so ill, just vomiting, diarrhea. They gave him antibiotics. He was in the orphanage care then, not in our center. But I had gone back to the state orphanage to work there. And I said to God, you told me to adopt him, and now he's going to die, because he looked like a child from a famine area. And then one of my team members, she asked actually our leader if we could put him in hospital and would pay for him, and he agreed, and so she did. And then I told her, ask them to investigate what's really wrong, and then they found out he had amoebia, and gave him the right antibiotic, and then got healthy again. And I told God, if you really want me to adopt him, then you have to keep him alive. And then after he recovered, I knew, now I'm going this pathway. And then that was end of 98. By that time, I had planned a furlough back home. So after he was well, I could put him into our center until I came back from the furlough. And when I came back in February 99, I took him into my home as a foster child, and then started the adoption process, which was very difficult, as China and Switzerland don't have an agreement on adoption. Their adoption laws contradict each other. But because I was living in China, it was possible. Mm-hmm. Switzerland has a law which says if a Swiss citizen has residency in a foreign country, they can adopt the child under the foreign law, and Switzerland will accept the adoption, give the child the citizenship. But I needed actually the Swiss embassy in Beijing to negotiate with National Civil Affairs on my behalf, that I was allowed to hand in my papers to the Chinese Adoption Center. But it happened eventually. It took 6 years, but as I was living there and having him as foster child, it was okay.
How old is he now?
21.
And do you mind if I ask how old you are?
65.
Do you have a partner, or are you a single parent?
I'm a single parent.
And what, before you were retired, what did you do? I mean, was this volunteer work that you were doing, or were you a staff member?
No, it's all volunteer work. They don't, of course, I was a long-term volunteer, but they don't pay people. It's volunteer work. I trained as a nurse and as a social worker.
And do you mind if I ask where you live in Switzerland?
It's in Burgdorf. That's a little town near Bern.
So when you came home with Pinpin, how did you sort of settle him into life? What was that transition like?
It was easy for him because he had been living with me in China, and I had already in China started speaking both languages to him, Chinese and Swiss German. And he 2001, they finally allowed me to take him with me on furlough. They gave him a passport. So he has been in Switzerland at least three or four times before we moved here. He knew my friends and my relatives. And he has a very good memory. He won't forget them. So he still knew them. And first we lived with my sister, and he loved that. She has two dogs, and he loved those dogs. And for 7 weeks, and then we found our own apartment, moved into our own apartment, and then was able to admit him to special ed school, and that helped him a lot. Yeah. Because there, they don't think about race. They're already different anyway, so that binds them together.